freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Well, we're going to excuse you from the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen in Ballard.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Yes, hello. Here we go. And we are rolling along on a Monday morning. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports. On 710SeattleSports.com, I promised some modeling.
You ever modeled?
Have I ever modeled?
Yeah.
What do you think?
You never know.
No.
I did.
Well, I believe that.
A couple times.
Yeah.
One time on a runway for some charitable thing, which was odd.
Yeah.
Because I had to do the whole catwalk thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Did you do your little turn on the catwalk?
I did.
On the catwalk.
And then another time,
on the catwalk, yeah.
Family friend of ours, rest in peace, Pat Freeland, mm-hmm. was a photographer, and she needed to take a picture of a homeless teen.
Sure.
In Tacoma.
So you modeled as a homeless teen?
I did.
Wow.
On some adolescent counseling magazine.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I could see that.
Could you see that?
Yeah, I could see you trying to pull that off. Were you able to take off your shirt or something? I know that would have appealed to you.
No,
was there some way you? Yeah, I'm just a homeless teen, but I'm doing crunches here in the street, kind of show off my guns.
Okay, so personal story. Here's the humble or not the non-humble personal story that leads right to it perfectly. Thank you. I do have a humble story that I will share over the next 2 hours. But after being humbled a little bit, I decided to come home, and in watching the playoff games, I thought to myself, huh. I wonder if I could do, because thanks to, you know, some changes in body lately, I wonder, and push-ups on a daily basis, I wonder during every timeout of these two playoff games that I'm going to sit on my couch and watch, what if I do 25 squats, 25 push-ups, 25 sit-ups?
At each one?
At each timeout break.
Oh, my God.
Yep. So between those two, and I thought, I wonder if I can get to 1,000.
Of each?
Yes.
In
a
day?
In a day. Yeah.
And?
Well, I mean, look at my little chart.
Oh, my
gosh. Oh, shoot. You can't see it. So then I wrote 1 through 10, and each little tally was worth, you know, each, you know, so 10, and I had to do 4 sets within each of those 10 to get to 1,000. So, yeah, started, and boom, knocked them out.
You did 1,000?
1,000 squats.
1,000 push-ups.
Just bodyweight squats, 1,000 push-ups, 1,000 sit-ups.
How are you feeling today?
Pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, not too bad.
How are you going to feel
actually.
Tomorrow?
Probably sore.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably
tomorrow
sore.
That'll probably catch
but
up
it's
to
a, you know, next weekend, some of you out there, some of you workout warriors, wow. as you're watching the two games, if you kind of start in the pregame and they go to timeout, just knock them out. Boom, boom, boom. You know, it takes about a minute or so, and then you can sit, and then, you know, you get about 8 minute breaks, and then boom, do it again, and do it again, do it again over the course of the two games, over 7-8 hours.
Nah,
not sweating.
All right. Well, you're ready to do some modeling.
Like the 360 says modeling, blue steel instead of blue 88. Ridiculously good looking.
I was going to ask how this ties into modeling.
Well, only one of us here has actually done any modeling, of course, and that Moore has told us some very funny stories over the years of her time modeling.
I did,
whole
like,
other life.
I will say I did actually have like a modeling contract, so it wasn't just someone needing me to pose as
yeah.
a person.
No, you were a model. That's what you were doing for a living.
Paid right. to be.
Many, many moons ago.
Yep. How many moons? Not that many moons. Anyway. So
is this the modeling we're talking about or not?
No.
Oh,
not
I'm sorry.
That kind of modeling.
I was wondering what modeling you were talking about. What does this workout have to do? Do you have a modeling job now?
No.
No, you're just talking about being in shape. It's just an excuse for Brock to brag about what he's able
to
do.
Just I'm just trying to get in prime shape for a month from now when we all get together in Arizona.
Wait till Bob hears about
this.
I'm
the look at me guy because I wear a yellow suit.
Yes.
You're both look at me guys. That can be true.
You're both versions of look at me
guy. Anywho, get to the modeling.
Brock can't help it. Everywhere he goes, people look at him anyway because he's gigantic.
Fair.
Yep.
Modeling in this case meant looking at other teams out there and trying to model yourself after them.
Oh.
But thanks all of you for going some other direction. Sheesh. Get Elle McPherson in here or something. God. Who are you modeling yourself after, Brock?
Well, if the Mariners are modeling after the Houston Astros and the Atlanta Braves, if that's been a sustainable championship-winning model in baseball, right, and I think in some degree draft, develop, trade, spend – I think those organizations in baseball have done it. Who would be the couple, as I watched these games this weekend, that your Seattle Seahawks can model this offseason and model this build around? Well, they had an amazing 2022 draft. that helped set them up, right? They found some, I think, significant cornerstone pieces in the draft, which you have to do. And it's what Cincinnati and Philadelphia have both done. And I think you look at, when I watch those teams and I look at the way they play, obviously San Francisco is in your division. Mm-hmm. John Lynch and Shanahan are tremendous.
You don't think that's the model that they're kind of going after? Like, I get what you're saying with Philadelphia and Cincy. I'm not necessarily disagreeing, but it's interesting. Like, I mean, when I hear Pete talk about that talent gap between them and San Francisco, maybe it's just because they're so close at hand, mm-hmm. but it sure feels like that's so much more of their model of what they're trying to do.
It is. What's hard about this compared to baseball,
mm-hmm.
what makes this significantly challenging is many of these teams have been built on top 10 picks.
Mm.
Cincinnati has been built on Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, without those two guys, they made a lot of excellent other additions, but without those two, they don't elevate their program, right? San Francisco has been built on Bosa and Armstead and in a crew that were top 10 picks in years where they had injuries and they just tore it all down and get, you know, just dudes. Now, maybe Seattle will, and we can look back and go, yep, they were built on Charles Cross and whoever they get this year at number five, right? That those were some of the big, big pieces. So that's where, to me, San Francisco is just a little bit of a tough comp because they did, in many ways, fall in to these, you know, just significant, game-changing, top five, top 10 picks, right? Because they had such bad, bad years. So that makes it a little bit hard. But, yeah, when I see Cincinnati, right, have a Joe Burrow and a Ja'Marr Chase and then supplement in free agency. And Maura put that list together, or Justin did, one of you two on our email last night. And you look at all of the free agent moves that Cincinnati made defensively, right? I mean, they spent on their D-line. They spent on their linebacker. They spent on their secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like $20 million plus. I mean, it wasn't top of the market, but it wasn't cheap. And they added just some significant dudes. Philadelphia has drafted very well. I mean, they're late first round picks, and what they've done on their offensive line, and you know, obviously, you know, Jalen Hurts is a second rounder, feels a lot like Russell is a third rounder, right? Just similar guys with just self will.
Feels very similar at
it
this
feels
stage of the career.
Very,
yeah.
Very similar. So, you know, the models are out there, right? These teams that are around are sitting there and they're showing you a blueprint, and it's nothing that Pete and John don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said in Blue 88, man, this game, this weekend, that tug of war at the line of scrimmage was overwhelming. And if you watched these games and you thought it wasn't about the transition, man, Lewis Riddick, did you see him on Twitter this weekend? He was fired up.
Dude, he is Woo! Feisty.
He's a feisty sucker on yeah, Twitter. He's
got receipts from anything anyone has ever said to him. And
yes.
He can't wait to get back at him. No, I mean, as I agree with you, Brock, and as you're watching, I just kept thinking about the gap that Pete talked about. And yep. Not just how good the defenses looked for Philadelphia and San Francisco and Cincinnati. I mean, like the winning teams all played really good defense this week. But even how much different Dallas looked against that Niners offense than you did a week ago.
Ooh.
And I know Dallas is not, I mean, look, they're not advancing either. They're done. But it wasn't because of that defense.
Nope.
And you see what kind of a difference you have between what you're running out there in your front seven and what Dallas is running out there. And it's a major difference. Their defense did enough to win that game.
Yep.
Right? I mean, the offense didn't, and certainly it didn't help that, you know, Mahar missed that kick, et cetera. But geez, their defense did enough to win that game.
So, their ability to run and hit was
pretty impressive. And it did not look anything like it did a week ago against the very same offense. So let's see. Coming up, we do have a full slate of takeaways from this weekend. We'll do Need to Know next. We do have a text here from the 509 concerning Maura's modeling career, wondering just how much she got paid by Pringles. I don't know. A lot of hand model comments.
Quite a few of those.
A lot of people wondering.
I
about
can guarantee you no one wants to use me as a hand model. We've discussed this.
Hand tongs.
Extra long gloves.
Oh,
like there's
God.
Dan Marino isotoner, and then there's Maura with the extra long gloves. So, all right. You Need to Know who's next. I'm Brock and Salk. Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
It wasn't the world's greatest weekend of football. It didn't come away with unbelievable classic, never forget them, great games and great moments. But it was a really good weekend of football. all of the games I thought were reasonably solid other than the Eagles game, and they just sort of blew the doors off the Giants. Patrick Mahomes, you know, fighting through injury to bring his team to a win over Jacksonville was great. Rematch now, of course, with the Bengals. I thought that game was really fun to watch. The snow just made it look cool, and those two teams doing battle. Once again, physical, two really good quarterbacks. And then last night, getting to finish it all off with the Niners and Dallas. And once again, two really physical defenses. That whole game changed on one play.
Purdy, a lot of room now. Holding up over the middle. Oh, what a catch by Kittle. Are you kidding? George Kittle.
That juggling catch, avoiding the safety at the end, kind of changed that game. And after that, I was like, nope, better team's just going to kind of run away here.
Yeah, that game in particular just had some nostalgia. It just had some throwback and thinking of Pat Summerall and John Madden and so many of the huge games. And he saw the cast of characters. Many of them were in the building last night that had played really on both sides of that rivalry. And it was just a physical fair, man. It was just a snot bubbling, hit each other. Who's going to outlast the other? And ultimately, Mike, these Niners, kind of like the Houston Astros, right in your own division here in town. And, man, they have been consistent getting to this NFC Championship game for, what, the fourth time in 5 years? A pretty remarkable run for them.
Kansas City? Five years in a row.
Well, for Kansas City, I'm talking San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco, sorry.
Yeah. And Joe Burrow was awesome. I mean, if Joe Burrow were in Boston and Philly and New York in L.A., you'd hear a lot more Tom Brady. You would see comps all over the place to just elevate him because,
so funny.
You know,
he moves so well that it's hard for me to see the Brady thing.
He does, but his cool, his eyes, he doesn't look to run. He plays the game with his brain. He's so unbelievably accurate. Their releases are so similar. And he's got Cincinnati, right, once again, on the doorstep of the Super Bowl. He's got Cincinnati on the doorstep of the Super Bowl once again in back-to-back years. Remarkable
what
stuff.
What world are we living in?
Here's the second thing you need to know.
The Matrix or something? Where are we? Things sounded friendly a week ago between Geno Smith and the Seahawks, right? Remember, it was a big love fest, and everybody wanted to get it done.
You know, I want to finish my career in Seattle. I want to be here. The town, the city, the team, Coach Carroll, the organization, they all embraced me. You know, I was a guy who probably could have been out of the league. They embraced me, and I want to repay him for that.
Yeah, except things seem like they've changed a little bit in the week since. Geno Smith tweeting on Friday afternoon, men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie. He retweeted that from himself and then added to it numbers, which certainly makes me believe that he got some numbers from the Seahawks in terms of an opening contract, and he was not wild about what that offer looked like. So what happens next? Look, I don't know where this goes. Maybe the Seahawks are going to come up. Maybe this is just a negotiating ploy. And maybe all of this is nothing. We're just kind of making it up. Mm. But I could certainly write you a script in which the Seahawks say, we've got a number that we're going to hold firm to. You may be worth more than that in the open market, and that's okay. But we're not going to pay that much money or any more than our number for a quarterback that we view as very good, but not necessarily elite.
Does not feel like nothing. It certainly feels like something. How significant is something? That's left for you all to judge, as well as Salk and I and all these Seattle Seahawks football fans and others, frankly. And what is this market going to look like? It's going to be a fascinating offseason. Going to be a lot more QB movement. There's going to be QBs drafted in the top five. There's a lot of QB needy teams, man, as many as I can remember in a lot of years. And I'll tell you one other thing that throws a little wrench into all of this. There's 10 OC jobs available in the NFL. Nearly a third of the offensive coordinator jobs in this league. And I know Dave Canales is interviewing the QB coach for one of those jobs back in Baltimore. You know, where does this go? Where do these systems end up? Does somebody that just absolutely loves Geno Smith end up in Tampa Bay as an OC, end up in New Orleans as an OC and says, I need that guy? Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating twist and turn and road and journey in this market for quarterback.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Shoot the puck here. Okay, he goes wide with speed. He comes in, he slows down, he stops. That's all. Colorado wins the shootout.
I already told you how much I hate the shootout, but if you're going to be in a shootout, carry your speed. Don't slow down. It's just not a good thing, and it didn't work out for Donato, and it didn't work out for Sprong, and the Kraken end up losing. in the shootout to Colorado on Saturday night. Other than that, it was a great game. And they do get a point out of it for going to overtime, but just frustrating. They carried play for most of that game, especially in the third period. Couldn't capitalize in overtime, and then lose in the silly shootout at the end, 2-1. They now get a couple days off until Wednesday. They'll be at home against Vancouver.
And what, three more home games before the NHL All-Star break? I know that's not the Avalanche team that won the Stanley Cup. It's missing a few pieces of personnel from a year ago. Got some guys, significant guys, still banged up. But it is a good measuring stick. Mm-hmm. And they have won three or four themselves, kind of rallied their season and turned it around here in season in January. And you went, they call it toe-to-toe in hockey? Probably not, right?
Skate to skate.
They went right with them. And as you said, kind of outplayed them for a majority of that game. And unfortunately, walk away with just a point. Also knocks them out of first place in the Pacific Division. Mm. Now a point behind those Vegas Knights.
All right, there you go. That is everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour here on the new Brock and Salk Show. How are you humbled, Brock? What happened?
So, really cool opportunity. Saturday morning, Titus and I went down. My nephew was on an official recruiting trip. Not that nephew, a different nephew. Mm. Gabe was on an official recruiting trip to the Air Force Academy. And I had not been inside the ropes there at the Air Force Academy. No people that played there. And certainly Bryce Fisher in the 1998 Oahu Bowl hit me a lot as the Air Force Academy beat me. And Larry Fedora has reminded me that every time I see him, an old coach there. And so go there. And I just kind of saw a smirk on some of these Air Force Academy coaches' faces. And I was like, huh, what's that little smirk for? And, you know, one of them happened to be the QB that I played against in that 98 Oahu Bowl.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And it turns out, Salky, that I wasn't there for this part of it. I loved it, by the way. A remarkable
what
place.
What was his name?
Great coaches. His last name was Thiessen.
Okay.
And so as it turns out, Aunt Heidi was telling me about this. She's like, yeah, you know, one of the last things they did, it was amazing, is they play this, they darkened the room and had all the recruits in there, and they played their chant that they do after every win.
Mm.
And it's this, like, Hawaiian war chant. Hmm. And guess where it started? It started in the 98 Oahu Bowl. So, yeah, after they won, they got in their locker room, and one of their players, somebody, like a Rainbow Warrior in there doing the haka, some warrior chant. And now, from that day forward, for the last 25 years, kind of like Damon's pick in Oregon, still gets relived. The 98 Oahu Bowl still lives.
You know, most people love the Hewards, but for those that don't, they really go after the Hewards like hardcore.
And it sticks around for decades.
Like, they don't let them forget it. The Hewards screw up.
I was wondering what that little smirk was on a bunch of these coaches' faces. It's because, yeah, you were the QB in the 98 Oahu Bowl.
How many games has Air Force won since then?
A lot.
Oh, really?
In fact, they're really good. Yeah, the last 4 years, they're one of seven programs, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Oregon, Utah, to have won 10-plus games a year.
Pretty good company to be in.
Pretty cool.
That's very cool. So. Yeah, good stuff. All right, coming up, we do have takeaways. No Seahawks game, but we did have four NFL playoff games to watch and a full set of takeaways, including sound that you don't want to hear next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
All right, rolling through Brock and Salk today on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com. Start thinking draft soon as well. We're gonna start calling some of our draft guys, Brock. I was thinking about that yesterday and start getting a sense as to what you're gonna do at number 5 and 20 and what a trade down might look like after hearing John Schneider last week. So this week I think we'll probably delve a little bit more deeply into that and start to think through where the draft will be for the Seahawks. But we got a chance to watch four football games this weekend, and like we always do as we watch football, we came away with a few takeaways.
Takeaways.
Along those lines with the draft, can I just tell you, I was counting days. And last week, we were at Refrigerator Perry. I forget what day it was. Tuesday, Wednesday. We were like 72 shows away from the draft. I'm thinking, can I do 72? Can I give our audience a 72 different players a day? Like one a day leading up to the draft? And I was like, that's a bit much. But when we get to 50, I'm going to give you 50 different guys. One a day, either in Blue 88 or somewhere
You'll
along the way.
Definitely get one if you throw out 50.
What do you mean?
I mean, that, you know what I mean.
I'm still giving you insight on 50 different dudes.
It's nice of you.
I'm not trying to be like right on who the Seahawks are going to pick.
No, that would never.
It's not like I have any pride in that.
You would never do that.
No, it's not like Russell and Tyler and K-9. I don't have pride in that stuff. It's for the audience, Mike.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have any takeaways?
I have so many. Like, honestly, I have some of the best takeaways in my life. Joe Burrow's eyes and his processing are just different. He is, now after 4 years of watching this, he's Brady and Rodgers-esque when it comes to his eyes and it comes to his processing. And it truly made me think, like, what would be the comp? Where else do you see those two traits? Elite eyes, elite processing. Because I have seen, and now especially, Salky, there are so many kids that can rip a football. It's like baseball, right? And when we talked to Jerry DePoto on Thursdays, there's so many youngsters that throw 90. So many high school kids all over the country throwing 90. There's 16-year-olds, right? So one of the international signees was like, oh, yeah, he's 16, he throws 93. I mean, it's just, and there's a lot of young QBs that can just throw the ball over those mountains like Uncle Rico. But what separates you? How do you know the Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady's, the Joe Burrows? What separates you? And I think the only other comp, honestly, are hitters. And the hitters' elite eye and their ability to process in that split second. And I know baseball has spent so much money on virtual reality and trying to just, can we time and how do we evaluate and can we project and can we look at these young guys and then can we develop that processing and develop that eye? And I don't think anybody's cornered the market on it. I know they're all trying to. I know these NFL franchises are trying, right? And they spend time and a ton of time bringing guys in. Okay, here, Joe Burrow, here's the playbook, right? And we're going to bring you back in 1 week, and we're going to see how much you've learned and how much you can regurgitate. And even that doesn't always tell you the full story because that can be just rote memorization.
I don't even know whether hitting is a perfect comp either. I mean, so much of that is reaction as well. There's some processing, and certainly the eyes are a big part of it. I thought about car racing, right? I mean, like, you see the guys on the, like, Drive to Survive, and they're doing a lot of the virtual reality, playing the video games to work on their processing speed and reaction time as well. But there's nothing like playing quarterback. Nope. It is different. It is unique. I mean, it's not just reflexes. Goalies are reflexes. But what those guys do to see what's happening, process it all, know where everyone's going to be, it's why it's the most important and interesting position in sports because of all that. You start off talking about Burrow, Brock. My takeaway on him this week, he's in the club. He's in the VIP section.
Yes, he is.
And I've been sort of holding off putting him there, just wanting him to just do it a little longer.
Yep.
He's there. It's been 3 years. He's one of the elite quarterbacks in the game, and there's only a few of them.
Takeaways.
They better not ever build a dome in Buffalo. I want more games like what we saw on yesterday. The seeing the snow coming down like that, especially the big flakes, that was beautiful. And it just makes football so entertaining. I don't want it for every game, but you want it to remain its special moment when you get a game like that. But one or two a year, when you see the snow, the visual image of it, the way it affects the game, and it doesn't affect the game, as you've said before, as much as wind or even sometimes rain, because guys can kind of find ways to play through the snow. So it's not like you get an ugly, sloppy, terrible football game. You still get really good games generally in the snow, but it's an incredible visual image, and just seeing it happen, I love it.
And you get nicknames like Snowburrow, so that's the best part. If we can take away from the snow game this weekend, Brock, I think you would agree.
You get snow angels at the end of it with those Bengals celebrating the end zone. You do. It harkens back to Oakland and New England.
Mm-hmm. Snow Bowl.
In the Snow Bowl. It's from a cinematography standpoint.
That's one of the best games I've ever watched.
Oh, it's unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just, it's yet.
Brady again, scoring that touchdown in that game and then, like, remember he spiked the ball and fell down? But you couldn't tell where he was. I'll never forget my buddy Dave, who I was with, going, what is he doing? What? You got to get up and run a play. We're like, dude, he's in the end zone. He had no idea. Couldn't see, couldn't tell.
And how about before the game-winning field goal, all the teammates clearing just enough room for Vinatieri? It is beautiful.
And it was beautiful yesterday. Really fun to watch.
Takeaways.
I promise I'm not just playing to the crowd. and our Cincinnati Bengal loving Justin Barnes.
Let's go.
I'm not just playing. Not every one of my takeaways is going to be back to Cincinnati.
You can, though.
I think this might be my last one. But I think I can say definitively they're the best coached team in the league. They are the best coached team in the league. That their scheme, I was so envious of watching. I even tweeted it during the game defensively, Mike. They just mixed and matched, and yet they're super sound. See, Pete Carroll believes in being very sound. He's one of these guys that's not going to play a trick defense. He's never going to be a Pittsburgh Steelers Star Wars. He's never going to be unsound and leave gaps open or leave areas of the field open. That is just not his DNA. It's not what he was brought up in with Monty Kiffin way back when and what he's done all through his career. He believes in being super sound, and you make that offense earn it. Cincinnati does a wonderful job defensively of mixing in blitz, of disguise, yet being sound. And then they come up and tackle, and they come up and hit you. What they did offensively was a clinic. When Tony Romo is talking Peyton Manning-esque and giving Joe Burrow the keys to the car in Buffalo and Leslie Frazier, you can't be right. And to do it in that environment, they don't have the greatest facilities. In fact, they've got some of the worst facilities in the league. They practice in their stadium. Their offices are in their stadium. They don't have a Taj Mahal on Lake Washington. They don't have all the finest. They don't give their players meals and take care of them like others do. They're still pretty darn cheap. They got one of the smallest scouting departments in the NFL. You've got to be able to coach, and your coaching chops got to be off the charts. And oh, by the way, yesterday, whoever their O-line coach, what's his name, Justin? Whoever that guy is, gold star effort, because three backups in the game and still push the Bills around all over the place. Right now, that's the best coach team in the league.
Takeaways.
All right, I have kind of a quick take version. I've got three things that I really enjoyed watching, three things that I did not like watching this weekend. On the things that I really enjoyed, I loved watching running backs move the pile and then seeing offensive linemen just come rushing over to help them. That's so cool. Just thinking about how much those guys squat and how much weight they're able to essentially keep from going down because it's crushing them on top of them. Pretty amazing. And then when the offensive linemen get excited and they come running in and move it forward, that's pretty cool to watch. Even cooler when it's a quarterback, by the way, and seeing, like, you know,
Josh Allen
do that. Yeah. That's pretty darn cool. I love watching linebackers close the distance, especially in the flat. We saw a bunch of that in the San Francisco game with Warner and Greenlaw, who were both just super fast. But those plays where, like, the ball sort of floated out to the flat and you're like, oh my God, the linebacker closed all of that distance. Pretty incredible to see. And it usually comes with a big hit at the end of that. And then just sort of along the same lines, but on the other side of the ball, seeing the acceleration of kick returners and wide receivers when they get a little space and they just run away from people. It's considering how fast the other people on the field are, when you see them accelerate like that, pretty incredible to watch. So those are just a few of the things that I really enjoyed seeing. A few things I did not enjoy seeing, in fact, would be happy to never see again.
I'm switching.
This commercial more than anything else. If I have to see Paul Giamatti.
Einstein? Oh,
my God.
Enough.
I'm switching.
Enough.
Why is Paul Giamatti, the son of Bart Giamatti, a guy who's been in any number of successful movies and TV shows, why is he debasing himself like this? What are you doing?
Numbers.
It's got to be a lot of numbers, man.
I'm switching.
To another carrier based on your commercial. Anyway, another thing that I really don't need to see anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what here, Jim. What I see is it looks like a play to the right, and if they run to the right, I guess they ran to the left. But I mean, if you go back and you look at the right, and then it's kind of like when you're on the golf course. You know what I mean? When you're playing golf, because that's something I'm actually good at. With the golf, well, maybe it's not quite like golf. Tony, stop talking. What is the deal? He is unwatchable at this point, Brock. And, I mean, Jim Nance is one of the best of all time. Tony is out of control.
Come on! Playing football! Defense!
What's the deal?
Well, I tried to tell y'all, when everybody was so enamored with him calling out plays, I told you why that was, right? I mean, he's
still in the league, basically.
Yes. He's a year removed. He's got teammates playing. He's got game plans. He knows their checks. Like, yeah, okay, that's great. That's awesome. You got a leg up and you're able to, safety comes down. They're going to check to this because you know it's coming. You know, 4, 5, 6 years removed. Guess what he doesn't have? And they have those same game plans and all his buddies that are still in the league. And he's not calling out plays anymore. Now he's just talking.
Ooh.
He just talks. You could tell. He just talks.
Just
and
talking.
Then figuring, okay, is a thought going to come? And is something going to come here?
Challenging to listen to.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, I know that everybody's kind of going gaga over Greg Olsen this weekend as well. I'm still struggling with Greg Olsen because of the Russ stuff. Like, the way he went in on Pete Carroll and the offense here and everything else after, like, stealing money from the Seahawks and dropping all the passes thrown his way and then calling them out in favor of Russ after what we watched this year, I'm having a hard time taking him too seriously.
That's just personal. I mean, you're not like personal. Well, maybe it is. You're personally close to
right.
that.
I'm not saying he's doing a bad job.
Yeah,
because I'm just saying it's hard for me to take him seriously.
Yep. He's the opposite of Tony, though. He doesn't just talk the talk. He's got pretty good insights.
Yeah.
And he was all over the end of the game and the different mechanics. And that was a big stage for him. This week will be a big stage. And then the Super Bowl will be the biggest of all. Got a great teammate in Burkhardt next to him.
I want more Mark Sanchez. Sanchez is my, like, breakout star this year.
Yep.
I love Sanchez. I like Schlereth doing a game. I don't know that I need any more Greg Olsen or Tony Romo.
Takeaways.
You started this with the draft and talking about the draft and what's to come. So I'm sorry. I couldn't help but watch these games this weekend. If you were kind of looking at it, you know, through the optics of team or quarterback, many times I was watching these games through the optics of top five picks. And oh my gosh, are they just... They're just different creatures, man. That supply chain at the top end of the draft of size, speed, production, athleticism versus even pick 30, 50, 90, right? The difference between 5 and the late 20s where these Seahawks have picked, the difference between LJ Collier athletically and Nick Bosa is off the charts. But just look at these games this weekend and look at the top end of the draft guys that we're playing. Bosa and Armstead, Trevor Lawrence, Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow, Micah Parsons, and CeeDee Lamb. You know what you just see? Difference. Different dudes. When you're talking about them closing the gaps, that doesn't mean that Bobby Wagner's, and it doesn't mean that Fred Warner's, and it doesn't mean that elite guys can't fall that have a unique trait. DK Metcalf, the end of the second round, for crying out loud. I mean, that's a top 10 body. That's a top 10 athleticism. And fell to the end of the second round for all sorts of different reasons. And certainly the possible runner-up to Rookie of the Year defensively, Tariq Woolen, different. And he could fall to the fifth round. But that top end of the draft, yeah,
there's some dudes.
There are some dudes. Yep. In Jacksonville, while Urban Meyer tried to sabotage it all by kicking his kicker and being an absolute fool and not understanding how to treat men and lead men in the NFL, that Jacksonville crew and their front, Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker and Arden Key and some dudes that can run and hit, and Travis Etienne is a first round twitchy, just different. And yeah, I mean, they've got, and you pile up enough of that athleticism that's different than the rest. You coach it well, you shape it well, you got a chance.
People are killing Greg Olsen on the text machine here.
Really?
It's like the most popular thing I've said in ages.
Well, it's back to the scene.
I think Olsen is as tough of a listen as Romo. Olsen is awful. I'm with Salk on Olsen. Olsen's terrible. He was terrible. LOL. I'm with you, not an Olsen fan. I mean, like, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Takeaways.
Most compelling story of the weekend was Brett Maher.
Yes.
I mean, that was so... couldn't look away.
Oh.
Right?
Oh. Titus and I both so nervous before... I know the PAT was going to be probably missed and shanked, but you didn't know for sure.
Yes, you did.
No.
Dude, he kicked that thing at the bench. He almost hit his tight end. Dude, that was not close.
He kicked it with his ankle.
It was not close.
But then that first field goal attempt.
Oh, then he got it right, and it was awesome after that. And I was really hoping, not that I wanted the Cowboys to win. I really didn't want either team to win. So, you know, I don't like either team. But I was sort of hoping for... an opportunity for him to completely redeem himself and end up with the game-winning field goal. That would have been pretty amazing.
I saw a lot of Jan Vonderveld comps. I didn't watch that live. I don't remember that live. You were not even into golf then.
Yeah.
Well, the week before was Jan Vonderveld. It was a meltdown of the same.
Because that's a choke. Because Vonderveld's a choke. Because he's leaving and he chokes. It's different. This is more like the yips. Vandeveld made bad decisions, and he choked under pressure.
This is more Chuck Knobloch?
Yes. This is yips. This is watching
Rick Ankiel
or Chuck Knobloch or Mackie Sasser like play out before your very eyes, and then he corrected it.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Good for him.
Ever been able to correct that on the course?
The yips,
right?
I mean, no, you have to like be good at golf,
like in round. So I used to play with Damon, and Damon would get him, and literally like the second hole, if he shanked an iron, he was done.
Done.
It was just done.
Yeah.
Like I got the yips.
We watched.
Like, I can't get rid of him.
We were watching. You watching any of the Amex this weekend?
No.
Well, I watched a fair amount of it. This poor guy SH Kim.
Who ended up winning that?
That was John Rahm, fourth in six events. He's won four championships in his last six starts. He is out of control. But this poor guy, approach shot, hits the flag, okay? Bounces so hard, it goes off the green, and then almost stops, and then drops down a hill, goes under a rake.
Mm.
He mishits the shot. It goes into the bunker. It takes him three shots to get out of the bunker. And then I think he took an eight. Looked like me.
That's tough.
Poor guy.
Next.
Takeaways.
All right, Salky, question for you. Three of the four remaining QBs left share one attribute. They share a bunch, but one that stood out to me maybe more than anything else.
Processing?
Nope.
Eyes?
Nope.
Hair?
Both those are good. Nope. All kind of good looking guys.
Toughness?
Nope. Three of the four, you don't know if it's a pick or touchdown. Three of the four have a poise and a stoicism that is different. And people used to say to me, do you like playing football? Like when I was in college. Mm. Because it's just the way that I process and play at high school and college, I guess, for that matter.
Do you even like sports?
Do you even like golf? Why do you have Scott Van Pelt on? those are inside jokes. But I was not one. I kind of really liked Troy Aikman. He was a guy that I watched a lot, and I remember watching Troy Aikman, and every once in a while he'd show some emotion, but very rarely. He's very calm. Joe Burrow, unbelievably poised and calm.
Mm-hmm.
Brock Purdy is a rookie, unbelievably poised and calm. Jalen Hurts, you don't know if it's a touchdown or an interception or a bad throw. Like, just their face, just their poise, just that, as I said, it's that almost stoicism. Mahomes got a little more charisma. He's got a little more juice up and down.
He was happy about the ankle.
Well, they wanted to go X-ray, and he did not.
No,
right? I mean, that was
pretty clear. That's not what he was looking to do.
Yeah, I don't want to know if it's broke. What's an X-ray going to tell me? If it's broke, it's broke. I don't want to know that. I'm going to play, and they needed to know. Like, no, did you break something, and are you going to further damage it? And they had to take that quick X-ray and got it done, and ultimately high ankle sprain. And then you see the inverse of that, and you see the danger when you're an emotional player like Josh Allen, a head coach, and his demeanor. I think impacts a team even more than a quarterback. And when those guys are Rex Ryan and they're loose cannons, it gives all the students and pupils in class the opportunity to be loose cannons. Josh Allen, emotional, a little more emotional guy. It's what he is. And you can win with it, not good or bad. It's just once you're that way, guess what happens? Stephon Diggs starts screaming at you, right? And you start to open that can of emotion for others versus when I am just so stinking poised.
It's funny,
so under control.
Gino's an emotional guy.
Yes, he is.
I mean, we saw that, and you said you liked it, and you liked some of the back and forth.
Well, you got to be who you are.
Yeah.
And that is who Gino is, but what did Pete do this year more than ever before? And even that cool little Zen signal. Yeah, like, hey, man, I'm able to level you out. Otherwise, you're a loose cannon, and your career is going to look like it did the first 8 years of your career.
253 says Greg Olson's that kid who thinks nobody realizes that he's the teacher's pet.
Takeaways.
Hey, why are defensive ends now allowed to line up in the neutral zone? What's the deal with that? I saw it like a half dozen times this weekend. Remember a few years ago when the Chiefs lost the AFC Championship game because Chris Jones was in the neutral zone? Mm. Now it's just like commonly accepted. What is the deal? Maybe we're getting bad angles on TV, but I don't think so. I mean, it sure seems like everyone else is lined up fine, and then one defensive end is like clearly across the neutral zone, and they're like, man, whatever. Why do they not flag them or tell them to move back or something?
I think sometimes two things. Number one, our angle that you see, that camera angle, can be a little bit deceptive at times.
Man.
And number two, you do have that linesman looking right down the line. And these guys are in such wide nine technique. They're like, you know, we've said this a bunch this year, so especially about San Francisco and Bosa. They're just like in this track stance. So maybe a little bit of that head at times leans into the neutral zone, but...
I mean, there were a couple times I saw yesterday where it looked like guys were fully lined up even with the ball.
Mm.
It's like, I don't... That used to be a thing where the ref would tell you, like, they don't want to call the penalty on you. They'd say, hey, move back, move back.
Right.
But it's weird. And especially in the NFL, where defensive players are never given any kind of an advantage, mm-hmm. I was surprised to see the league allow that to happen.
Okay, one last quick one. I got to just confess something. This won't be popular.
Takeaways.
I'm sorry. This won't be popular. It's my job.
Uh-oh.
It's my job. I don't hate the Niners. Sorry. I don't hate them like I hate the cheating Houston Astros. I hate those guys. Sports hate. Can't stand them. Can't stand little Altuve. Can't stand any of them. And I know they're very good, and they built things the right way, and they drafted and developed, and they're young shortstop, blah, 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 blah. Can't stand them because they cheated. I can't say the same about San Fran.
Really?
No.
I don't know. Just, every time they show Christian McCaffrey on the sideline, I have no problems working up some hate.
Yeah, John Lynch is smart. Kyle Shanahan's a brilliant chess match. They have been able to do what the Seahawks haven't, frankly, since the loss of Dan Quinn. They've been able to turn over D coordinators, and Robert Saleh got guys playing, and D'Amico Ryan's got guys playing. And they're just violent.
I'm with you on a lot of that, but there are a couple guys on that team. Like, I like Debo. I like Ayuk. I mean, watching this kid Purdy is kind of a cool story.
Fred Warner running down the middle of the field with freaking CeeDee Lamb.
I really like Dre Greenlaw. Yeah, I'm with you on some of that. But I
Jimmy
think
Ward?
The amount I dislike both George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey is enough to kind of keep me hating that team.
You don't like Kittle, huh?
No.
Really?
Look at me, guy. Guy who wears a yellow suit out, all his friends.
I knew you were going to go there.
And all the tats?
Look at me, guy. I don't know, just the way he celebrates is annoying to me.
He doesn't have just a couple tats. He's tatted everywhere.
McCaffrey's the one that I can't stand. I cannot stand Christian McCaffrey. He might be my least favorite player in football, but he's high on the list. I don't like him at all.
Interesting.
Yeah, he just bugs me. All right, that's a full set of takeaways from the NFL weekend.
The NFL is so good, man. I'm sorry. It has so many stinking storylines.
I know,
right? It's unreal.
And even when the games weren't great, they were not a great slate of games. They didn't go that great.
But here comes an up-and-comer Jacksonville, and Peterson's done an amazing job. And then they're in a snow globe. And the four
best teams are left. Say what you will. The four best teams in the NFL are left playing this weekend, and that should be a ton of fun. Speaking of being the best, what's the best way to be there with the best? Seahawks got a major choice ahead of them, and it's next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.